This week, a look at the arrest and incarceration of Luciano Arriaga after he was attacked by Phoenix, Arizona police officer Warren Poole. This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of July 6th, 2006. I'm Ron Anisich with your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption. In 2002, Luciano Arriaga was working at around 9 o'clock on a February morning when he was attacked from out of nowhere by Phoenix, Arizona police officer Warren Brett Poole. Arriaga was tackled, punched, and pepper-sprayed by Poole, who had given him no indication that he had done anything wrong prior to the attack. At one point, Arriaga was being choked by the officer and grabbed a nearby 2x4 and swung it at the officer. Poole then grabbed his gun and pointed it at Arriaga's head with the intention of shooting him. Poole said that he saw Arriaga fail to stop for a stop sign as a motive for the beating. It was later determined in court that Poole could not have witnessed the infraction and the traffic charge was thrown out. This raises some questions about why Arriaga was confronted by the officer to begin with. Arriaga went through three trials on charges of assaulting a police officer and resisting arrest. Arriaga's version of events remained consistent. He has no criminal record, no outstanding warrants or tickets, was not in possession of a gun or drugs, and had done nothing wrong. Officer Poole's version of events kept changing. Since February 2002, he has given many explanations for and versions of the story of his contact with Arriaga. Many of these stories are contradictory. Poole has a record of complaints for use of excessive force, and at the time of the February 2002 incident, Poole was facing jail time and the loss of his job and his driver's license. Despite all of this, Arriaga was convicted at his third trial last month and is now serving a 7-year sentence. Another appeal of the conviction is in the works. Linda Bentley is a reporter for the Sonoran News. Bentley sat through parts of the third trial and has covered the story for her newspaper. I spoke with Linda Bentley about the Arriaga case earlier this week.
Louis had already rounded a corner, pulled into an alley. He was out of his truck and walking towards this body shop that he was going to. And that's when Poole turned the corner. Poole didn't have his lights on before that. And Poole's story changed so many times from what happened at that point. He never asked Louis for his license. He never asked him for his insurance. He never asked for his registration. He never told him why he was even stopping him. And the whole question that I have in my mind is, why did he ever get that close to Louis?
It seems as though he took him down, if
yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, he did, and there was no reason why. And his story changed even from what he was telling dispatch when he was radioing in. Like one time he said, he was like in a foot pursuit. And then another time he said that Louis was just standing there, but he could tell from his body language that he was squaring off at him. So, well, was he running from you, or was he standing there? He yelled at Louis after Louis was already out of his truck and walking towards this thing. He pulled up, and he didn't know at what point he even turned his lights on. But, you know, he said, oh, well, I just used intuition to think that he ran the stop sign. Then he used intuition to think that, you know, this guy was, like, speeding away from him at 25 miles at up to 25 miles an hour, but they're in a 35 mile per hour zone. So he wasn't speeding. So then, you know, Louis turns around into this alley and he gets out of his truck. I think he said he left the door open and he starts walking towards the body shop in the alley, and Poole pulls up behind him. And I think it might not have been until he turned into the alley that he turned his lights on. This is like at 9 o'clock in the morning, mind you. This is not at night. This is in broad daylight.
The situation escalates to the point where it becomes a physical confrontation.
Right, and Louis has no idea why this guy stops him. And mm-hmm. at one point in time, while Poole's got Louis on the ground, and Poole is like, 6 foot tall, weighs, 190 pounds or whatever, and Louis is like, 5 foot 6, 5 foot, I don't know what he is. He's substantially shorter, and back then he weighed like 140 pounds. He had no idea why this guy was stopping and why he was doing this, and he kept yelling, "Why are you doing this? What do you want me to do?" And Poole at one point had his gun out of his holster, aimed at the back of Louis's head, ready to blow his head off. And yeah. Louis had no clue what was going on. He pepper sprayed him, he beat him, and he finally had him in a chokehold. And Louis was just about ready to pass out. I mean, the survival instinct kind of kicks in, and he reaches out for whatever. I mean, this guy's on his belly on the ground with a cop on him,
choking
with
him.
His neck in a chokehold.
But he felt as though his life was threatened.
Right, and so he grabs for anything he can reach, and he grabs onto this 2x4, this piece of lumber on the ground, whatever, and he's... And what kind of leverage do you have if you're lying on your belly in a chokehold, swinging blindly behind you? So he swings this thing, I mean, and he releases it as he does it, and apparently, you know, it made a little cut on Poole's head, and he released them from the hold. There were witnesses standing around, and all the records of any account of anybody standing anywhere around there, there's no record of anything. The only record now that's the quote-unquote official record was the taped interview, like 2 hours later when Poole was down at the hospital getting, you know, 6 stitches in his head where the board hit him. And that was the official record. You figure when the fire chief was there, the attorney asked him on the stand, "What did you see?" He says there were a lot of cop cars there. And mm-hmm. You figure there's a lot of cop cars there. You figure there's an incident. There's a lot of cop cars there. Why is there no record of anything? And when Poole said Arriaga was, you know, fighting him and everything, well, and Poole had to take him down and all this stuff. Well, if you look at a picture that was taken of Poole, you'll see Louis. He was filthy from head to toe. I mean, he was on the ground, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Poole, his uniform was dirty from the front of his knees down. That was it. So it doesn't look like there was a big fight going on or a big scuffle going on that Poole was involved in. It looks like he just took this guy down. When the after-the-fact stop sign violation came to court, it was proven that Officer Poole could not have possibly even seen the stop sign from where he was parked.
So after all this, both were taken to hospital. Presumably, Louis was...
I don't know if Louis was or if he was arrested and taken to jail.
So he gets...
Because they said, you know, it's like assault with a deadly weapon against... He was charged with assault with a deadly weapon against police officer and resisting arrest. Oh, yeah, and then the stop sign, because that's why he was being, you know, stopped in the first place. But that was an after-the-fact thing. No one ever asked him for anything. They didn't ask him for his driver's license, nothing. And usually when a cop stops you, they tell you, or they'll even ask you, "Do you know why I stopped you?"
Mm-hmm.
But none of that happened. It was like, "Hey, I want to talk to you." And when he approached him, I mean, apparently he approached in a space-invading manner. You know, how did he ever get so close to Louis for something about a stop sign? And Louis has no warrants, no tickets, no drugs, no weapons, no nothing, no record.
Well, interesting enough, though, Officer Poole did bring up in his statement that he made at the hospital to a detective whose name is Newberry, right? He did say in that interview that he believed that Mr. Arriaga may have a weapon or may have a gun. Do you have any idea what made him think such a thing?
Oh, it was his intuition. Okay. I mean, this is the whole thing. And then in court, when they had an expert witness, his name was White, I believe. I know I wrote it somewhere.
The one referred to as RoboCop.
Yeah, RoboCop. Yeah, John White, Sergeant mm-hmm. John White, 20-year mm-hmm. veteran. He said, "Oh yes, when you do a traffic stop, you're on heightened awareness." So because you never know what you're stopping. And that makes sense to me. But at what point, you know, does your imagination go off into the deep end and you're really, really wrong, and you've got someone that has no clue what's going on in your head, and you have this heightened awareness and you're fabricating all these things that you think are probably going on, and here's a guy that's just doing his job with no clue why you're even stopping him, and you're not even telling him.
Is it true that Officer Poole used pepper spray?
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to, you know, beating him,
oh, he punched him. He used pepper spray. I mean,
it was a pretty nasty altercation.
From Louis'
perspective,
to a point where when he was sitting in the back of the squad car when the fire chief showed up, they asked him to attend to Louis, and Louis was refusing everything, and the fire chief said, "Oh yeah, he was cussing at me and everything," and Louis' attorney asked him, he says, "Well, yeah, he was really pissed off at the time. Have you ever been assaulted?" And he said, "No." You know, because, yeah, Louis was pissed off. He'd just been assaulted. He had no idea why. And he almost lost his life, and he didn't know why.
He's threatened at gunpoint, as well as beaten and pepper sprayed.
Oh, and Poole put on the show during court, and he was in tears when he said that he had his revolver out and was going to aim at the back of Louis' head. And was gonna, I mean, if you're aimed at the back of someone's head, I would think you're already in control of the situation, that you don't need to blow their head off.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sitting on top of them with a gun aimed at the back of their head. I don't know. I have a problem with that. And one of the things that was really disgusting was that they refused to let it be known in court in the trial, and that Poole had a pending extreme DUI at the time. And that's why he was on patrol. Is he was taken off the SWAT team, which is, you know, more elite.
Yeah, he was a sniper, is my understanding.
Yeah, and then he was put on, you know, just patrol duty.
Well, yeah, let's compare the two records of the two men involved, because eventually this did go to court, and in fact, there were three trials on the aggravated assault and resisting arrest
charges.
And
what's really interesting is Poole went to court on his DUI and the results of that, and that's where the judicial complaint came in.
Ultimately, after three trials, Arriaga was found guilty, and Louis is in jail right now, right?
Right. He's in prison, yeah.
And
he was sentenced to 7 years, which was the mandatory minimum for because there's a dangerousness element attached to assaulting a police officer. So the judge's hands were tied. In fact, all the judges in all three trials, well, I think it was the same judge in the first two, but the judges all went to bat for Louis. And they tried to do anything they could, but these were jury trials. Louis didn't testify in the third trial, and I don't know if that was a mistake. He testified in the first two. The first trial ended up being a hung jury. The second trial, well, it was a hung jury on the assault charge. They convicted him of resisting arrest. The second trial, it was a hung jury, but his attorney at that time didn't feel he had a fair trial because the way the information was presented was his resisting arrest charge from the first trial was presented that he'd already had a record, he was a felon. So they made it look like he had a previous offense when it was all from the same incident. So that got overturned,
mm-hmm.
And that's when they got to the third trial. And the third trial, I was astounded, sitting in the same courtroom as these jurors, and they came back in 45 minutes with a unanimous conviction. It was unbelievable.
Did you ever speak to any of the jurors in that trial?
No. There was no opportunity to do that.
What it came down to, if I understand what happened at the third trial, was and I guess the subsequent two as well, was that you have to believe one or the other version of events. And the version of events that Mr. Arriaga has is a lot different from Officer Poole's version of events.
Yeah, but what's interesting is Arriaga's story has never changed. Poole's story has changed repeatedly. And you have a different jury each time, so they didn't hear his last testimony. They don't make the last court record available. And Louis didn't testify at all in the last trial. I don't know if that was a mistake. I don't know if it was a mistake that he ever, testified at all. I mean, he stood up for himself. It's like, he could have entered into a plea agreement and probably been done with all of this by now. But Louis's not going to sit there. And I know a lot of people do because they're, in fact, there's a lot of people that will enter into a plea agreement to something they did not do, and their attorney might recommend that they do it, even though they didn't do anything. This will give you 1 year in jail, 2 years in jail, a year's probation, whatever. But the jury can convict you, and they'll tell them what the maximum is. You can get up to 20 years in jail for this. So a lot of people will sign a plea agreement, but they're also giving up their right to appeal by doing that. And Louis stood really firm. I mean, they offered him plea deals. They offered him all kinds of things. He could have been in jail for 4.5 years instead of 7, but he would have had to apologize to Poole. I mean, it was basically lick my boots and kiss my butt. That was what they wanted. Plus, they want him to pay, and I think he was still ordered to do that, to pay Poole for his medical bill for hurting his thumb and beating him up. He's a really nice guy. He's just the whole family. They're all really nice people. And Poole's a sleaze bag, but yet the city is protecting him. They don't want lawsuits. And they know that. And I have documents here that Poole signed when he hired on that if they requested that he take a polygraph test at any given point in time, that he would have to take it or he could be terminated. They refused to give him one. And the Arriagas have asked for that to happen, and they refused.
Well, there's also the issue of the believability of the two individuals involved. I mean, you're looking at a Mr. Arriaga with no criminal record, no warrants, no tickets, no drugs.
Poole, to the jury, had no criminal record, no nothing, because they would not allow that to be entered into evidence.
He had, in addition to his DUI, his extreme DUI, he also had several complaints for excessive force on his record, right?
Right.
Was he just
and they sealed that.
Was he disciplined in those past cases?
I think that they were just complaints. I don't know that he was ever found, liable for anything. But he's got a history of a bunch of things on his record. And what's really interesting is when I filed a public records request with the Phoenix Police Department, requesting everything in his personnel record as far as discipline, commendations, whatever, and they knew I knew about the DUI, they sent me all the commendations. They sent me one paragraph from the DUI thing out of a 9-page report.
How was that resolved?
The DUI?
Yeah.
Oh, the DUI thing is really amazing. He requested continuance after continuance after continuance for his pretrial, and then when he finally couldn't ask for any more continuances, he decides he wants a jury trial. Well, then they change it to a jury trial, and they set him up for trial, and they summons the jurors, they summons the witnesses, DPS that cited him and whoever took the blood alcohol reading and all those things. So they had all their evidence, all their witnesses, their jurors, and then he asked for continuance and then another continuance. And I think they continued, I don't know, I think they had to hunt down everybody three or four times. And then when it's ready to go to a jury trial, he decides he wants to do a change of plea. And then, so they set him up for a change of plea hearing, which he requests continuances for. And this went on and on, and it seemed like if you look at the Arriaga trial and you look at his continuances, he didn't want to have a conviction while this trial was still going. Mm. And so he kept... And the last continuance doesn't even give a reason. It just said he's unavailable for a change of plea on this day and would like to enter a change of plea, and they pick a date like a month later. And they... What kind of justice is this? I mean, they're supposed to dispense justice in a timely manner. Well, then you find out that the justice of the peace in the court that he was in for his DUI, he was with the Tempe Police Force for 17 years, and then he was the chief of police in Lake Havasu City, Arizona, for 13 years before he came back here to become a justice of the peace at the West Tempe Justice Court. And I'm thinking, this is looking a little crony-like. All these, you know, continuances. I mean, I don't know a judge that would allow anything to go on. This went on for beyond a year. And keep changing, you know, what you want to do. Well, finally, he enters a plea agreement, and they take his extreme DUI and knock it down to a regular DUI. In which case, statute here in Arizona says that you have to do 10 days in jail unless the judge can waive or they suspend, is what they say. They can suspend 9 of those days if they agree to do the alcohol, they complete the alcohol treatment program or whatever else it is the court asks them to do. Well, that's what happened. So he had one day, and statute requires mandatory minimum 24 hours in jail. And he signed a plea agreement that he was supposed to self-surrender to Maricopa County Jail by a certain date. Well, that never happened. Anyways, he never went. And his attorney submitted something on November 1st. I think he was supposed to complete his 24 hours in jail by November 8th. On November 1st, his attorney submits this fax to some gal named Lola, who's a court clerk at that court, and says it says on the reference line, jail time completed. And then it says, as per our phone conversation this afternoon, the following shows that he's completed his 24 hours under home arrest. And I'm thinking, you know what? If anyone who had a DUI in Arizona could spend 24 hours under home arrest as opposed to going to Joe's jail, that jail would be empty. Oh. Nobody's going to go to Tent City. No one's going to risk their lives in Joe's jail if they didn't have to go. There's nothing in statute that allows a justice of the peace or a judge to waive that mandatory 24 hours. So basically, there should have been an order to show cause hearing as to why he never completed his 24 hours in jail. But there never was. And after the fact, there's something that shows that it was okayed. And it's got the judge's initials, and it's hard to tell whether he actually initialed it himself. But it was still after the fact, and he had no authority to do so. So that was when I had requested the entire court file, and that's when I found out. I called the judge and thinking, well, you know, maybe he doesn't know that this clerk is doing this. So I figured I'd bring it to his attention and asked if he was aware and asked him to call me. Well, he never did. Next thing I know it, he's on the agenda of the County Board of Supervisors retiring. And then 1 month later, he's on the County Board of Supervisors being appointed as a Justice of the Peace again through December of this year. So I have no idea what's going on with all that, but All I know is that Poole never went to jail, but when he went to Louis' sentencing hearing, he said that Louis deserved to, you know, serve the maximum amount of time, and he played up the victim role. And here's a guy that wouldn't even spend his own 24 hours in jail. He spent it at home under house arrest and had to do a breathalyzer test or something, you know?
Yeah, he would have had to, he would have been facing a fairly stiff fine and some fairly major time in jail if he had gone through a trial on this charge, very likely.
Possibly, but just the fact that he never spent his 24 hours in jail and was able to, the statute does not allow. I mean, there's nothing that allows a judge, just like Louis, Andrew Klein, the last judge, his hands were tied. They had mandatory sentencing. And the mandatory minimums, I mean, Andrew Klein continued the case so that he could talk to the county attorney's office and try to get rid of this dangerousness element. In fact, Andrew Klein said something like he admired Louis' determination and what he was standing for, but maybe not his choices, knowing that, you know, he was going to prison for 7 years when maybe it would have been a better alternative to enter into the plea, because there was nothing anybody could do. And there were people, the head of the NAACP, there were people, Reverend Tillman, there were a lot of people that went to bat for Louis and got nowhere. And the city of Phoenix is protecting Poole because Louis had filed a lawsuit against the city of Phoenix and the police department on this, and they wanted this lawsuit to go away. So as long as Louis's in jail being the wrong guy, you know, being the party at fault, they don't have to worry about a lawsuit. And so they're protecting Poole.
And you've been frustrated in your own efforts to records independently.
I mean, knowing all this and not being able to do anything, I mean, I keep plugging away. And I filed a complaint against the Justice of the Peace, and depending on what happens with that, I'll probably go, you know, back to Arizona Post, which is Peace Officers Standards and Training, and it's the state agency that holds the key to their peace officer certification. So I don't know. I mean, it just depends how, if anyone's going to step up to the plate and find out, you know, hey, you've got a corrupt guy here. You need to get him off the police force. And, of course, he's so close probably to retirement by now, because I think at the time this happened, he was 13 years on the force.
Mm-hmm.
And so you figure all these years went by. I mean, he's probably like 2 years from retirement at this point. But if you look at, like, What did he do that day that he got that DUI? It just really goes to his character. He was out, he told whoever he was going to a ball game, a baseball game, downtown. Well, on his way to the baseball game, he decided instead he'd go to a couple strip bars. And that's when he started drinking. Then he went to another one, and that's when he was shit-faced drunk and decided to drive home and drove into a guardrail.
Yeah, 20 or so beers later, from what I gather.
Yeah, and the whole thing is that he, being on the SWAT team, he was going to be on paid standby time. And at the time that his shift would have started for paid standby, he would have still been legally drunk.
So he would have showed up to work drunk that day.
Well, I don't know if they even have to show up, but he would have been legally drunk. What if they did have to call him? I mean, he's on standby, and he's getting paid for that standby time, which means that you're supposed to be available and ready to go when they call you.
And
well,
if they
called him, he would have been legally drunk.
I think I read that there was a fairly good chance of that happening, that he would get called out an average of once a week or so.
Yeah.
In that job.
I don't know. I know that the parents are so frustrated. The family is totally frustrated. Louis's character, I mean, just the fact that he would not lay down and take a plea, I think that speaks volumes to his character.
No,
whereas you look at Poole, who tried to skate on just 24 hours of jail time, where Louis standing up and saying, no, you know, I'm not going to plead to this. I didn't do it. And I'm not responsible for this. I'm not going to plead to that. And he still has appeal power. So.
Are they in a position to file a lawsuit at all at the end of
this? They're appealing. They're still appealing.
Right.
They have done that. They filed for appeal. I'm not sure exactly where that's at right now. But he has filed an appeal on this, and we're just waiting for the process seems to be eternal.
Yeah, hopefully there'll be some kind of resolution to it soon.
But I've told the family, I said, I'm not going to stop on this until I see justice.
Something's got to be done about Officer Poole.
Well, I think his character needs to come up in the court. And I think that them protecting him and his records and sealing them and the fact that the police department has destroyed a lot of evidence or just simply doesn't know where it is, they're covering something up, and it's blatantly obvious. Also, when would you know that a lot of police cars were there and not a single one of them took a supplemental report of any kind? There were witnesses standing around, a whole bunch of police, and there's no record of what Poole told anyone else other than 2 hours later when they made the official recording of what happened. Well, I don't know if they weren't interviewed or if they just kind of poofed all those records along with the photos, along with any kind of evidence from the scene, you know, other than the board that Louis hit him over the head with. What he told dispatch, and they did have the radio, they had the dispatch operator on the stand, but there was such the whole story has changed from day one, from the moment it happened to, and when you find out that, like, everything that was done was almost like a cover-up, like, one second he radioed in and said the code that he said was he was going to lunch, and then 2 seconds later he says he's in a foot pursuit, and then he tells him, well, Louis squared off at me and he was just standing there, but I could tell from his body language that he was going to do something.
Even though he wasn't suspected of any crime in particular.
No, nothing. I mean, I don't even know if Poole ran a report on him. I don't know. I mean, Poole apparently didn't do a lot of things that he probably should have done. I think he was really probably pissed off that because of his DUI, he was back on patrol duty.
Demoted from sniper to checking parking meters.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think there was a lot of that and a lot of imagination going on. And I don't know if, you know, there was racial profiling or whatever. You know, that's irrelevant as far as that goes.
Seems that if you see a Latino gentleman and your first thought is that he has drugs or a gun on him,
yeah,
then there may be something to that.
But he had nothing to, and that's the whole thing, is he didn't have any probable cause other than what he made up after the fact.
Well, and he had no reason other than the guy's race to believe he had a gun or drugs.
But then again, you know, they were saying, oh, he had tinted windows. How would he even know who he was or what he was? But then he saw him standing outside, you know, in the alley.
Right.
And then I don't know where his brain went from there. But he put on a really bad show in court, especially during the sentencing. Louis lost it. They had to pull him out of there because Louis was so angry. They had to get him out of there. He started yelling at Poole. It was just like yelling that's because they allow cops like this to remain on the street. Bad
cop, Luciano Arriaga's family has been put through tremendous financial and emotional stress by the legal system. Their support of their son and brother has been unwavering since the outset. Earlier this week, I discussed the beating, arrest, and subsequent trials with Luciano Arriaga Sr., Louis's father.
It was on a Wednesday morning, February the 6th of 2002.
Right.
And The policeman said that Louis didn't stop at a stop sign, so he followed him for about 2.5 blocks without turning on his lights or siren or nothing.
Right.
So when Louis stopped at the second stop sign, even the policeman said that his stop was picture perfect. So then he goes and turns into an alley to visit a friend, a business. This man has a business, a body and fender shop, Miranda's Auto and Body and Fender. So he pulls into the alley and doesn't even know that the policeman or anybody's after him or nothing. So he gets off his truck and proceeds to the body shop, and then he sees a cop come up, you know, in his cruiser, and yells at him, "Hey, hey!" So my boy stops, and then the policeman gets on his radio. He's radioing something, and later we found out that the policeman was lying. He was saying that somebody was running behind the bank. This came out in the second trial, and a police dispatcher verified it. So as my boy is waiting, then the policeman comes over, approaches him, and my boy says he looked mean, and he got closer, he looked meaner, and then just grabbed him by the head and knocked him down and started slamming his head on the ground. Bam, bam, bam.
And as far as Louis knows, well, Louis has not done anything wrong.
No, you know, because later it was proven that he was lying about, the policeman was lying about the stop sign, you know, because he couldn't even see the stop sign, and he admitted that in court under oath. He couldn't even see the stop sign.
So there's a fight. There's a fight between this police officer and your son that doesn't appear to be provoked by anything real.
Well, after he just jumped on him and started slamming his head on the ground, and pepper sprayed him, and then started just beating up, you know, hitting him with his fists. And then after being punched for so long, he tried to choke him, what they call a keratite chokehold. So then my boy, getting ready to pass out from the chokehold, on his stomach, seeing some sticks laying there, so he reached for one of the sticks and swung over his head and hit the policeman in the head, a minor injury it was later.
Now, we should be clear about this. Louis believed that his life was in danger.
Yes. You know, he was getting ready to pass out from the chokehold, from the punches, because this man outweighed him by 60 pounds. And he admitted he's a weightlifter, he's a physical instructor and all that good stuff at the police academy, mm-hmm. I guess. And then my boy getting ready to pass out, he did this, I guess, to save his life, because, you know, getting ready to pass out. He said if he would have, because the policeman had already grabbed him by the belt loop, and his hair was going to slam his head on the edge of the concrete. My boy said if that would have happened, I would probably be dead or retarded or something from another blow in the head at the edge of the concrete. So he hit him with a board, and then the policeman was going to shoot him in the back of the head.
Pulled out his gun.
Yes, he was going to set... Now, then the policeman said he feared for his life, so he was going to shoot my boy in the back of the head.
But Louis didn't have the stick in his hand anymore, right?
Right. Once he hit him, it flew away.
Right.
But then the policeman later told his sergeant that Louis hit him several times with a stick, which is a big old lie. And then he just changed his story. He told his supervisor, Sergeant Vasquez, Ronald Vasquez, that Louis ran into the body shop and he had to tackle him, and just different stories, you know. He told other officers that Louis refused to give him his documentation, you know, driver's license, proof of insurance, and all that stuff, which was another lie. Just one lie another lie.
Louis was never asked for his driver's license.
No. But the officer Poole told one of the other officers that Louis refused to give him his documentation, which was a lie. He never asked for no documentation, you know. He just attacked, and that was it. And then another officer, Sergeant Johnson, testified that he heard over the radio, "Foot pursue," that somebody, that this officer was chasing somebody on foot, which was another lie. There was no foot pursuit. Just one lie after another lie. And then my way of thinking is, after he got hit with a stick, he had no right to shoot nobody, because he's the one that initiated the attack. So So that would have been murder one, as far as I'm concerned. But thank God he didn't pull the trigger. But
at some point, Louis was subdued, taken into custody.
Yes, after several officers were called, and they handcuffed him, hog-tied him, I think Louis said, from the his hands behind the back, then his ankles. And then he said, even after he was handcuffed, another officer, he calls him a 300-pound Hispanic, came over and stuck his thumb in Louis' skirt tight vein, trying to still kill him or render him unconscious or something. Yeah, after he was hog-tied. What a brave police officer, I say. You know. 300-pound Hispanic guy still trying to kill him, you know, while he was already handcuffed and on the ground. And then they called the owner to come out, which was the wife of the owner there. And she came out and right away recognized him. Hey, that's Louis. And then
Louis was doing some work for the body shop, right?
He went over there to pick up a steering wheel, I think, that this guy was fixed up for him or something. And they're friends, longtime friends. And the owner's name is Luis Miranda, and his wife is Mary Miranda. So Mary came out and seen right away she recognized Louis. And he was saying, get your thumb off my neck or something like that to the officer. And one officer came over and put his knee on his back, anything to hurt him, you know, which was not right, you know. Then they stuck him in the police cruiser. And then he seen this other officer come up in civilian clothes, and then this officer, his name is Scott Stallman. And then when we went to court, Louis recognized him. Hey, that guy was there in civilian clothes because he had the same clothes, black trousers and a maroon shirt. And when he testified, he was one of the guys that really, really made it sound like Louis was a bad person, saying bad words and stuff like that. And Louis said, this guy wasn't even there. But he went and testified that Louis said this, Louis said that, which was a lie. And then they showed a picture where Louis had a scrape on his face, and this officer said, I caused that, which was a lie. Because Louis said, this guy wasn't even there. But it's just like a conspiracy to get Louis in trouble.
Well, and to protect the officer who attacked him in the first place.
Yes, like they're saying that he never caused any injuries, which is a lie. Then he was booked at the police station, and one detective was going to ask him questions. Louis said, "Nope, I want my lawyer. I want to talk to a lawyer first." So then he didn't say nothing. You know, he said, "I want my lawyer." But then this same detective said, I need your shirt, and if you don't take it off, I'm going to get five other officers here to take it off for you. And to me, he said, what a bunch of brave guys, five officers against a 5'6", 140-pound man. So they took his shirt, and they took him to Madison Street Jail, and the jail refused to accept him, reason being his high blood pressure, his scrapes on his face and all that. So they took him to the hospital. Phoenix Memorial Hospital. And the officer that took him, my son called the house and told my wife, I need a shirt. We didn't know what was going on, so we went over to the hospital and said, what happened? And the officer was standing next to us right away. His name is Cloyes, last name Cloyes. He said, it wasn't me. You know, guilty as hell, you know, that it wasn't him that did the damage. And then Louis said, oh, this guy's okay. We're talking about sports and all that good stuff. But when we went to trial, this officer proved how good a guy he is. Right away, he denied taking my son to the hospital. Yet me and my wife talked to him there at the hospital. And in court said, no, I didn't take Louis to the hospital. That's perjury, lying under oath. But the judge let a whole bunch of cops lie under oath because they were interviewed by a private investigator, and then when they went to court, they all changed their stories, and the attorney, Mr. Martin Lieberman, kept catching them all lying under oath, but the judge didn't care. He just looked at the ceiling and twiddled his thumbs and all that.
Well, this has been before the courts three times now. Louis was charged with resisting arrest, mm-hmm. aggravated assault, mm-hmm. and the traffic infraction, which was immediately, which I guess was dropped at the first right away.
Mm-hmm. And Ron, he was never told he was under arrest. They just made that up. You know, actually, it was a legal arrest because there was no reason to arrest him. And a PI who had been a former police officer said, you don't arrest somebody for a traffic infraction. But they did everything wrong just to, make him look bad.
Well, if everybody who allegedly ran a stop sign got taken to jail, the jails would be very full.
Overflowing.
Yeah.
Another thing was that this cop was driving with a pending .15 DUI that morning. And he had gotten a DUI on June the 15th, 01, on his way to work. And here he was driving with, according to Arizona law, you lose your driver license right on the spot. And here he was months later driving like nothing had happened.
This is Officer Poole.
Yes, Warren Poole, Warren B. Poole, number 5011.
He's
the world's biggest liar.
I understand that at the first trial, there was a hung jury.
Yes. It was 5-3 on the ag assault, but he was found guilty of resisting arrest. So the judge, I looked at the judge, and right away he slammed his book, said, okay, we go to trial in 60 days. So we went to trial in 60 days, and this time they made sure that they found him guilty. And he was found guilty in December 02. And he was sentenced on January the 17th, 03, to 10.5 years in prison.
This was appealed.
It was appealed, Ron. And first we went, the judge signed an order, what they call a 603L, which gave Louis permission to go before the clemency board in 90 days after he was sentenced.
Okay.
So we went to the clemency on July 2nd, 03, and our attorney, Mr. Martin Lieberman, helped us. And he sent a letter and all kinds of paperwork to the clemency board. But the policeman was there with the county attorney, Shauna Neighbor, and the whole union representing the president of their union, which is called PLEA PLEA. And of course, we went back and forth, and we lost by one vote, 3-2. So back to prison. Louis was never there. He was still in prison. Mm-hmm. There's you can pass the clemency one, then step two. If you pass step two, then the governor can sign a release for you to get out. Yeah, phase two. So after that, we went with what they call the appeal, and that one he won. All three judges of the Arizona Appeals Court voted for Louis to get out, and he got out. The decision was overturned on August the 18th, 04, and he came home on October the 29th, 04, which was my wife's and I's wedding anniversary, and that was the best wedding anniversary we've ever had when Louis came home.
But that was short-lived.
Yes. He went back to work, and then they didn't want to drop the charges. Reverend Tillman, NAACP, talked to the county attorney about not having a third trial, and he was ignored. So they took him to a third trial August 05. And right away, our attorney told us that the prosecutor asked the judge that he didn't want the jury to know about the policeman's .15 DUI. So right away, we lost the trial right there. Because the way I believe, Ron, any jury in the USA will not vote for a policeman with a .15 DUI, and they know it, and that's the only reason they're going to keep winning.
Well, when you're looking at an accused man with no criminal record, no no drugs on him, no traffic tickets, no outstanding warrants, and then you're talking about the adversary having many complaints of excessive force, mm-hmm. having an extreme driving under the influence of alcohol charge, which was outstanding still, had not been resolved when you were going through court.
Right, it was a pending DUI. He was out driving like Yeah, plus when he got that DUI, he almost got killed. He totaled his vehicle, personal vehicle. When he got that DUI, he was so drunk. And I told my boy, he's a hypocrite. He's violating the law, drinking, and then he's trying to give tickets to people.
For nothing.
He's just been a hypocrite. You know?
For nothing, in Louis' case.
I know it. He don't belong in the force. And then right now, there's a Phoenix Police Hispanic Advisory Board, and one of the members is 1,000% behind Louis, and he's asking that they give this guy Poole a lie detector test. And we haven't heard anything lately. But also about a month ago, Reverend Tillman went to the FBI at our request to see if they could help us.
Now, Reverend Tillman is with the NAACP, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. Yes. And then they have a group called ASPOS, and the governor appoints its members. I think it's 11 members. And one of the members is Attorney General of Arizona, and they meet once a month, ASPOS. What they do is certify and decertify, revoke policemen's paperwork, certification. So I wrote a letter to the AG, not as the AG, but as a member of ASPOS, and sent him the information about Poole, everything, DUI, the whole story and everything. And a member of his staff called me, Mr. Black. He called me and told me, you know what, this last trial, the judge shouldn't have even let Poole testify an account of all his previous lies. In fact, this man belongs in what they call the county's Brady List. The Brady List is a list of officers that cannot testify in court on account of all their previous testimonious lies. So he said, this man belongs on there. Also, he said, he's the one that recommended. You ought to get the FBI involved. So that's what we're doing. Plus, I later found out that this man is a former assistant police chief of Phoenix. And he's saying this guy just is a bad person. He don't belong. He should be gone. So hopefully something comes out of this, you know.
So anecdotally, there's a lot of momentum, at least anecdotally, that something will be done about Officer Poole in the long run. But that doesn't do much to help Louis out.
Well, the way Louis figures, if they gave him a lie detector test and it proves that he was lying all about Louis and all that, then chances are that somebody might do something and, you know, get him released if he's Louis in there on account of his lies, you know.
How difficult has this been for your family? I imagine that trial after trial after and all these arrests and court appearances and networking with the NAACP, and this must be taking a lot of not only your time, but your family's resources.
Well, Ron, this happened 5 days after I had retired. Retired after 41 years as a sheet metal worker. And 5 days after, this happened to my son, so hasn't been much of a retirement. And it has really affected us mentally, physically, emotionally, and financially. And yes, it's been hard. It's hard to see your wife cry for her son.
Are there further legal steps to take in court now? Are there more appeals?
Well, June 30 was the deadline for one of the court recorders to send in her documentation. So June the 30 was her deadline. So now things can get rolling at the Court of Appeals. I can give you the Court of Appeals case number if you want to check into it. Because
sure.
We looked into it, and right away it says they received documentation, personal files of Officer Poole, and in there there's 3 sealed documents plus a confidential criminal history. What is a man doing working in the police with a confidential criminal history? That's not right.
What can somebody who hears this do to help you out?
Well, right now, on that website, my other son, Wally, put up two petitions, plus all the stories are in there. And the website's called setlouisfree.com. And the petitions, one is to the governor of Arizona and one is to the city manager of Phoenix. And the petitions are... Well, you know, get rid of pool. That's one of the petitions, and it's called Poolgate. And then the other petition is to the governor to, you know, do something for, you know, for God's sake, do something. Well, the governor and also the city manager of Phoenix, Mr. Frank Fairbanks, he has a right to fire the anybody, including the police chief. So, you know, they think, well, in fact, Reverend Thielen says that they saw a lawsuit coming, so they had to do anything to put Louis away. So they're just protecting, like Linda says, that they're protecting themselves against a lawsuit. After my boy was sentenced the first time in 03,
yes,
I went to the his attorney's office, Mr. Martin Lieberman. The first thing he told me was, your son is innocent.
This is the state attorney?
No, that's our private attorney.
Oh, okay.
We used him for two trials, Mr.
Right.
Martin Lieberman and
right.
Mr. John Blishock. So he told me, your son is innocent. I said, we knew that. But then last summer, when you know they were getting ready for the trial and all that, I wrote him a letter, said, Mr. Lieberman, please contact the county attorney and tell him that my son is innocent, you know. But no, he knows my boy's in it, but he won't lift a finger to help him.
You're not happy with your legal, with some of your with some of your legal help, I guess.
Well, they can only do so much. For instance, on the last trial, right away, when they didn't want the DUI to come in, so I figured, you know, any like I mentioned before, no jury would go with a cop with a DUI. So right away, you know, we lost. You know, but. We have we hired another attorney for the appeal, and he seems like we stand a good chance because knowing that the policeman has a criminal record, so he figured we stand a good chance to win the appeal.
Well, and complaints for excessive force on top of that.
Yes, another thing is he says they read everything. Like for instance, complaints excessive force they hide it from us, but the attorney told Louis about it. But we can use it, and then because they're sealed, big deal, sealed documents, which I don't think it's right for a judge to jump in and seal something from a policeman who is a public servant. A public servant should be proud of his accomplishments, not have somebody jump in and protect him, you know.
If you would like to help or would like more information about the case of Luciano Arriaga, you can visit www.setlouisfree.com. Thanks to Linda Bentley and Luciano Arriaga Sr. for speaking with me for this week's program. Bad Cop No Donut is produced at CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto and can be heard on campus, community, pirate, and internet radio stations throughout the United States, Canada, and elsewhere. This show is available freely for nonprofit use. You can download the show, sign up for our email newsletter, support the show, read news, and find out more about this program at the show's website, www.badcopnodonut.fm. We value your input. Please send your comments or story ideas to ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to everyone who sent in articles for this week's program. I'm Ron Anisich. Thanks for listening.